Boys is a comedy show here on 2SER 107.3. And it's about to start. But before we begin, we have been told by basically everybody that we have to warn you about our language and themes, because it might be offensive to some listeners. So, if that's you, well, sorry.
What's up, fam? This is Loud Noise coming at you live this sexy Sunday evening right here on 2SER 107.3. I'm Will, and in case you haven't heard, Loud Noise is the only show in Sydney calling it down the middle. No bleeding heart for far left-wing liberals, no pandering to the alt-right bullshit brigade. So get checking your virtue signalling at the door and start sparing yourself from any agenda-driven nonsense. We're here now to fix that part of your brain.
Hey team, I'm Hannah, and now there was a whole heap going on this week that we are going to get right into. Not unlike a bull in a China store, Trump was in China this week. We'll take a look at the groping tiger, dictator, dragon of it all. Justin Trudeau channeling another Justin, another Canadian Justin that is, with a no-show at the TPP signing ceremony. And closer to home, the Turnbull government is still in turmoil, surprise, surprise, as the citizenship saga continues to take scalps. And a heated Loud Noise debate about guns. All this and more, plus the usual lols to get you going, so stick around.
But before we get right into it with you, just in case you're feeling like our finger is on your trigger, you can soothe your sensitive soul at www.2ser.com/loud-noise. And if that doesn't work, you can always whine and moan and gripe and groan at Loud Noise Show on Twitter.
We're about to get down and dirty, I promise. But first, a word from the money man. Men and women, equality and all.
You're listening to Loud Noise, the show that's made from blood, sweat and tears. And vomit. And semen. Don't ask.
And that roughly translates to, Granddaddy Xi, please don't be too mean to my Grandpa Trump when he's over there trying to negotiate things with China.
Oh, come on. It was a masterstroke of manipulation from the Trump camp. It is absolutely playing to everything that Xi allows himself to be played to. He's got a long, you know, a strong fondness for children that are, you know, pandering to his to his largesse, and using that as a means to internal propaganda, in a sense.
Oh, I'm sure that video's been all over China. I mean, they're going to love it.
Completely viral. Yeah, 100%.
But what was Trump hoping to achieve with that?
It's almost as though he's virtue signaling. It's just China signaling. It's in the same way as, like, anyone does a lot of what they do, but he's just trying to show, you know... When you compare it to everything that happened when Obama went to China twice, like all the issues that arose, like the fights at the airport and all that kind of thing, it's a way of him showing that it's not just, you know, he doesn't just want a good relationship, that he's taking this, you know...
He wants to be family.
Yeah, pretty much. He wants to be family, but in a sense, he's it's not lip service. When he says, like, he wants strong ties with China, his own granddaughter is learning Mandarin. You know what I mean? Like, he's... It's not just with his words and with his rhetoric. He's showing that within his own family construct, these kinds of things are happening. That there is this connection with China. And it's incredibly clever. It's the same way. I know you're scowling, Hannah, and I know a lot of you listening might be scowling, but it's the same way that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump were so effective before the election in going to the Chinese consulate and dealing with all the issues that were coming out of, you know, Donald Trump's rhetoric on China during the campaign.
I get that. It just feels a little bit uncomfortable using a little girl as a political pawn.
Everyone does it. Every politician uses children. And is she really a political pawn, or is she in some way, you know, becoming now an operative because her future is guaranteed, in a sense, in China. Once Trump's all done, you think she's not going to be wildly successful doing business with people in China?
I don't know, but she's what, six? Five, yeah, six?
I'm just saying, like, if you think about it in that kind of, you know, that kind of way, this one song that she's sung now is going to make her a cult hero in China later.
Yeah, okay, but is this whole thing Trump crawling back through the door with his tail between his legs after repeatedly slamming China during his campaign?
Definitely not. It's him actually taking advantage of the situations as they come, as you do in business. You can't think of it like, you know, Trump is... Look, I've got a lot of things that I could say that are very negative towards how he's run his country, or not his country, but how he's run America as president. A lot of negative things. Foreign policy is not one of them. This is brilliant because it's playing to Xi exactly how you need to play to Xi. In the same way that Xi's playing to Trump, exactly the way you need to play to Trump, by letting him have the dinner in the Forbidden City, by, you know, giving him like the ultra uber red carpet treatment in China. Like, they're both playing the game really, really, really well.
Okay, so who won this week? If they're both playing the game, they're both catering to the other person, they're both moving their little chess pieces, who came out on top after this week of negotiations and trade talks and North Korea talks?
She did. 100%.
That's what everyone's saying. So how is that not Trump sort of crawling in with his tail between his legs?
Because Obama went twice and crawled in with his tail between his legs and caused incidents. Trump did exceptionally well considering the circumstances, and he was playing on the away court. He wasn't playing on his home turf, and he did really well. Like, I don't necessarily want to admit that, but he did really, really well.
So what did he actually achieve?
He gave Xi what he needed, what she needed to have... an official visit that this much effort has gone into. He gave him exactly what he needed. So in a sense, by placating Xi, he ensured that the relationship, because he allowed Xi to keep face by playing along, by not, you know, saying anything that was going to cause any kind of drama, by not bringing up South China Sea. And the most important thing for Xi, especially in China, like within the internal thing, is to keep face. And Trump let him do that. But by doing that, Trump's, you know, garnered a lot of goodwill by doing that. And it could have been bad. There could have been a diplomatic incident. There could have been a lot of things that happened, but there wasn't. There wasn't. And Trump, I can't stress this enough. He did really well. And it should not just be surprising to people, which it obviously is, but you can't say that he didn't act in a presidential way and isn't continuing to act in a presidential way throughout this whole Asia trip.
Yeah, I think on the world stage, he's not looking too terrible. There's a few things he said this week that we'll bring up later that I have a bit of an issue with. But generally, he's less of a clown when he's away than when he's at home.
But that's the thing, right? Like, if you take away, like, maybe there are things that the world doesn't agree with his opinion on. So you could say, like, you know, climate change, all these kinds of things that people might not necessarily agree on. But when you look at how he's handled himself diplomatically, there hasn't really been any big incidents.
What do you think of Trump tweeting and being on Facebook while he's in China?
Yeah, people might say it's a faux pas, but that's how he communicates. That's how he, you know...
Yeah, but it's blocked there, so he's obviously had to go around the official...
No, but he'd have different... access anyway, because you've got to have encrypted state.
Yeah, I know, but isn't that like a little bit of a finger up to Xi?
I think Xi's got bigger things to worry about on the internet than Trump getting on Facebook and Twitter. I think what they're planning with their trust score...
You mean the Xi-approved version of Meow Meow Beans?
100%.
Meow, 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 meow.
I think that, you know, that is going to be what's going to...
It's very 1984, isn't it? Like, rating people on their social media, rating them on their bank history, rating them on the things that they say about the government or they possibly don't say about the government, looking at their friends and social connections to see, you know, and then excluding them from things if their rating isn't high enough.
I think any social experiment, and especially at such larger scale, there's going to be unintended consequences, and I don't think it's going to end well. I really don't. Anytime anybody's tried to social engineer at that kind of scale, it just has not ended well.
So what do you predict is going to happen then? I mean, is there going to be a revolution, or are there going to be heaps of refugees leaving China simply because they cannot even buy a car because their social score isn't high enough?
That, see, that's the problem. It creates a false sense of self because you're having to play along to a particular tune that the government is setting rather than actually expressing yourself. And like, people might think in China there isn't a lot of freedom, but in reality there actually is, because you might not have that political freedom, but you have this kind of economic freedom. And by doing this, by saying, okay, if you don't purchase the approved things, if you don't, you know, go and see the approved shows, then you're somehow inferior, and then you're trying to drive people into this way that you prescribe as correct, and it's just not going to work. Like, it has the potential to completely collapse what they're trying to build there.
Well, I just think of it like this, like, what if I forget to pay my rent, which I've done before. Like, I had an auto pay thing and it ran out and I didn't notice and my rent was 2 months late. My landlord was like, fine, just pay me tomorrow. And it was okay. But in this system, if that had happened, that would have lowered my score permanently. That would have been on my permanent record. And it was just an innocent mistake. I'm not actually bad at paying my bills, but that's what it would have looked like to any prospective landlords.
Yeah, 100%. But I don't know how much people know about what actually happens in China, but they're already the most surveilled nation in the world by far. Every single, you know, message that they send, everything they buy, it's all there, big data. Like any they can find any car that's driving on the streets. They can find any person that's walking on the streets. They do this already. But this is just a way of taking all that data and then collating it in a way to then control a populace. And that's where it's going to mess up. Like, if the whole collecting of the data, that won't cause a problem. That's their prerogative. And if people are willing to sign up to, like, you know, WeChat and, you know, and buy their thing.
We're doing it here. Our data is being collected. We're no different.
We are doing it here, but not to the extent that they do it in China, because they don't have to worry about, you know, certain kind of civil liberties and privacy laws. Like, it's to an extent, anytime you talk to someone from China, like, and the extent to which it is prevalent in China is ridiculous. I don't want to share too many stories on air of what I've been told, but it is beyond comprehension. But it's one thing to collect the data. It's another thing to then try and, you know, to create some kind of metric, to create some kind of...
Score,
but program. Because this is what it is. It's a social engineering program that the potential for this to go catastrophically wrong.
Yeah.
It's beyond ridiculous.
It's like a social prison, really. Like, you're confined within this very tight box of what you can actually do. I mean, you wouldn't score well. You like buying video games. That would that would mark you as potentially being lazy to your potential employers.
And this, for me though, the biggest issue that this brings is that it inhibits innovation, because you're saying that you have to follow this path, and there's no invention, there's no, you know, mind, and no, not so much mind altering.
Trial and error.
Yeah.
I mean, you need trial and error for invention. You need to try things, fail a lot of times, and then succeed once to create something amazing.
And you need to look for different answers, and you're not going to find them within a box. So, anyway, speaking of boxes.
Hey, can you hear me? I'm broadcasting from the future, and I've come to deliver a terrible warning. It's the year 2020, and Australia has become a full-blown nanny state. Following the incredible success of the King's Cross lockout laws, the New South Wales government decided to assign every person in the state with a personal nanny. Now, if you want to go grab a drink, you need to avoid your nanny by climbing out of your bedroom window, like in a cheesy teen movie. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now. Oh no, I've been spotted. There's Mrs. Gertrude.
And just where do you think you're going, young man?
Mrs. Gertrude, I was just going to grab a few beers with some mates.
Now, at 8 p.m., That's way past your bedtime, young man.
But I'm not a young man, Mrs. Gertrude. I'm a fully grown adult. I can choose what I do with my own free time.
Not on my watch. I won't have you staying up until 3 a.m. on a Tuesday morning slamming vodka shots until you pass out on the dance floor. That would be ever so beastly.
But it's a free country, Mrs. Gertrude. Australia was founded on libertarian principles of civil liberty.
What?
It means I can do whatever the hell I want.
Watch your language, young man.
You won't silence me, Mrs. Gertrude. I'm going to fight for my right to party.
I think someone's getting cranky. I think it's time to go biddy-bye.
Screw you, Mrs. Gertrude. Are you listening, people of the year 2016? This is the terrible fate that awaits you unless you fight back. Don't let it happen. Stick it to the Nan. Stick it to the Nan!
Greetings, people from the future. You are listening to Loud Noise on 2SER 107.3.
We are back now. You're probably sick of it by now. Every single day on the news. On, you know, not just, you know, Channel 7, Channel 9, ABC, on the radio, on Sky, or everywhere you look, everybody's talking about this citizenship thing. Now, you could say from the start that all these people knew, they knew that they would be dual citizens. You can't not know what nationality your parents are, and for the most part, they would have figured that there could have been some issues, but it's just the inherent laziness that's within our political class and our political system at the moment that nobody bothers to check. And then when they realise that they might be, you know, in trouble, they try and wriggle out of it. But there's been a lot happening this week and even this weekend in that regard, Hannah.
Yeah, well, John Alexander, who found out he may have a little UK connection he hadn't disclosed, he's now officially resigned as of yesterday. He got quite a tongue-lashing from the Prime Minister over his failure to bring up his citizenship debacle thing a little bit earlier. But also, the new senators that were brought in to replace the ones that had to be kicked out because, you know, dual citizenship, one of them's already been referred to the High Court.
And that would be New South Wales Liberal Holly Hughes, who had taken up a paid position with the Administrative Appeals Tribunal. And under Section 44.4, you can't hold an office for profit while you're, you know, an office for profit within, like, you know, the Commonwealth, within the government, while you're, like, you know, a sitting senator. So you can't necessarily be, you know, the commissioner of the prison system and then be a senator for New South Wales. Like, you're not allowed to do that. So her whole eligibility is going to be in question. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, that One Nation senator that got, I can't remember his name right now off the top of my head, but he got 19 votes. The one that was taking over for Malcolm Roberts. 19 votes and he's going to be a senator in Australia.
It's a joke. Like, this whole thing has become a joke. And I think the whole world is laughing at Australia because while Bill Shorten keeps going, oh, yes, bipartisanship, we're going to come to some sort of solution here. It's going to be fine. And Malcolm Turnbull's all like, resolution, as he does. Both of them are just waiting for the opportunity to gain some kind of political advantage. And they don't give a shit. They don't give a shit that this is costing a lot of money, that nothing's getting done in Parliament, that they're not doing their fucking jobs.
There needs to be a full and comprehensive audit of every single politician in Australia. Once and for all, because then you take out the guesswork, and if you're going to, again, I've mentioned this a million times, if you're going to be a politician and you're going to virtue signal and you're going to, you know, claim to be of a higher standard. And
then
you're
have to be a higher fucking standard.
You have
it's that
to,
easy.
It's the same if you're trying to be, like, say, if you're an officer in the army. That they drill into you, act as if. So you're acting in a way and you're conducting yourself in a way of that higher standard. Same as, like, you know, the Spartans back thousands of years ago. You're trying to embody what... It's not enough to have the lip service. It's not enough to say that you want to embody something. You have to actually do it with your actions. And they're not doing it now. And they're letting down not only their constituents, but they're letting down the rest of the public who have voted them in to be representatives and to set policy and to, you know, make sure that this country is running in the way that it should. And I know it's a trivial thing for them to be, you know, getting like kicked out because of like their citizenship, but they get enough benefits as it is. Once and for all, there needs to be a categorical, you're this or you're that. Maybe it needs to be a royal commission or some kind of inquiry in the same way that they like grilling everybody else.
Well, I mean, do you think they should have to pay back the money that they fraudulently got to campaign and get elected into parliament in the first place? Because that's something Corey Bernardi has brought up. And quite frankly, I think if in any other job you fraudulently got money to do something, then you'd have to pay it back. It's our money.
I don't know about if you're talking from the sense of that during their actual campaigning.
Yeah.
I don't think that they have to give that money back, because to say, okay, yeah, you fraudulently obtained that money while you were running for office, again, a lot of that would have been spent on things that aren't necessarily going to, like, it benefits the printing companies, it benefits whatever, unless they own the printing companies like Jamie Ashby. But, like, as long as, you know, it was just done in the electioneering stage, fine, whatever, that's fine. But the money that you earn once you're doing your actual job,
that should be paid back.
That should definitely be paid back. And any kind of income that derived from the money that you earn as you do your job. So if you've got those, you know, sweet little 10 properties that you've got by negative gearing the tits out of it by ensuring that legislation doesn't change in relation to people who own multiple properties. And look, I've got no problem with negative gearing. I think it's great. But I'm not saying that as someone who's a legislator. Someone who actually has the power to dictate what laws are in effect, what laws aren't, because that's the same kind of gripes that all these politicians in Parliament will have with, say, the Chinese leadership, and they have a go at their state-owned enterprises and the ways in which they engineer the economy for their own purposes and benefits, but they do the exact same thing here.
So are you saying here that we could simply solve Australia's housing crisis by getting these politicians to maybe give back all these properties that they bought with our money that they fraudulently obtained through lying about their dual citizenship?
I don't know if I'd say solve, but I'd say, you know, put a little bit of a tiny dent in it. Why not? Give it to refugees. Let them live in it.
I'm sure Peter Dutton would love that.
I'm sure he would.
Absolutely. Thrilled.
Once upon a time, a few boatloads ago, I was in the sights of the Navy boat. You found me. You found me. You found me, me, me. Shipped me to Nauru, and I hated that. Locked me in a cage, I could not fight back. Abused me, abused me, abused me, me, me. Me, family's all gone. They drowned next to me. Taliban took my home, but you're blaming.
are back. Now, another week, another American gun massacre. So this time a shooter's gone into a church and it's come out that he shot babies point blank in the face. Trump comes out and says, this is not a gun problem, it's a mental health issue.
It is.
I'm not saying it's not a mental health issue, but it's also a gun problem.
Who stopped the massacre?
Was there anyone left alive at that point?
Who stopped the massacre? I can tell you.
The guy ended up shooting himself in the head.
The Texas massacre in a church?
Yeah.
No. That is not what happened.
He was chased first.
A man came in with an AR-15 assault rifle, shooting the assailant twice. Then that man escaped in his car, where he was followed by the man who had the AR-15 assault rifle until such time as he couldn't drive anymore.
He ran off the road and then he shot himself in the head.
Yeah. But he was stopped by a man who came in with an AR-15 assault rifle.
But here we go, right? You're saying he was stopped by another man with a gun.
A good person with a gun.
But a few weeks before, there was a shooter in Walmart and heaps of other people got out their guns and, you know, tried to shoot back at him. And when the police actually arrived, they had to spend hours and hours and hours going through every single person that had pulled out a gun to make sure that they weren't the actual first shooter.
Okay, so when the police actually arrived...
And the guy nearly got away.
When the police actually arrived and it takes them 11 minutes on average to get to an event, by that 11 minutes, and it's not a knock on, you know, police in general, but within that 11 minutes, people are going to die. A lot of people, especially when these people have high-power assault rifles. But the thing is, in America, if you take away people's guns, like, it would cause anarchy. The whole construct of America is built on everybody's right to bear arms. And it's a way to stop tyranny. It's a way, in their minds, to not have another civil war, to not have...
Shooting little babies point blank in the face isn't tyranny?
But it's who they're selling guns to. It's not having adequate background checks. It's not having a system
where... gun laws. There's a problem with gun laws in the country.
There's a problem with bureaucratic... like malaise with a bureaucratic system that doesn't, you know, it's one thing to say, oh yes, we're going to do stringent checks and we're going to do this, but then you've got someone just sitting there not doing their job properly.
So, when was the last time Australia had a massive gun massacre? Please tell me.
That would have been in 1996 at Port Arthur, and then after that they did a buyback amnesty, and I don't think that anyone in Australia should have sold back their guns, because I think that everybody should ensure their own personal safety and everybody should ensure that there can't be any kind of tyrannical government. People assume that, you know, oh, the government's fine, we live in a highly democratic country and nothing's ever going to go wrong. But the only way you can ensure that is by remaining armed.
Fair enough, but we're talking here about actual, you know, innocent people dying.
Things happen. Violence always occurs. Look at all the innocent people that die around the world. No one's crying about the thousands upon thousands of people who die in Africa.
You're deflecting, every day.
I'm not deflecting.
You are deflecting.
Because I don't think that people should be.
When was the last time a baby got shot point blank in the face with an assault rifle in Australia?
I don't even know if that's ever
happened. Do we have mental health issues here in Australia?
Yeah, but people kill babies. They stab them. That's deflecting by saying, oh, well, think of the children. Won't somebody please think of the children? I'm thinking of my own personal safety, my own personal liberties. Everybody should be allowed to bear arms as long as you're a responsible citizen and you're only using it in self-defense. Like, it's almost the highest and most transcendent level of self-determination, because you're never going to allow yourself to have a tyrannical government impose their will on you.
All right, and
wait and see what happens with automation. And once they start building those robots that have guns, and we'll see how many people want guns then.
Anyway.
That's all, fam.
Yeah.
We've got to bounce. But if you're just pining away for more of the good, you can slide on over to oscr.com/loud-noise. You can gag and beg for it at Loud Noise Show on Twitter, or let your fingers do the stalking at thecentre.com.au.
Now, as your depression at our exit tonight builds, your pain and suffering rapidly culminating into a life of crime, find out the best ways to drop the soap, because Jailbreak is up next to share its slippery secrets with you. We'll be back next week at 9 p.m. But until then, see you. Bye. For now, Loud Noise crew, I'm Hannah.
And I'm William. Have a great rest of the day. And remember, the left is never right and the right batshit crazy. The biggest gift would be from me and the car.